Welcome back to Grit. This week we are talking with Dines, creative director and founder of exciting content creation house Studio Blub. In this episode we talk about design, whether grades at school are important, and building your own company from scratch. So we're going to jump over to the UK now to talk to Dines of Studio Blub. Hi, Dines. How are you?
Hello, John. How are you doing, brother? You good?
Good, good, good. It's so nice to talk to someone from London after a long
time.
I miss it, mate. I miss it. Yeah. I really wanted to catch up with you because I'm just sort of blown away by your journey through creative content and. I don't want to use the term design because I think that's too simplistic. The work that you've done and the way that you've built your studio, it really fascinates me. So I wanted to kind of ask you about that. So for the audience, do you want to just give a kind of quick overview of what Studio Blub is?
Yeah.
Kind of what your role is as the founder and creative director?
Of course. No problem, Bose. Listen. Studio Blub is something that we want to do to change the industry. We're very focused on like the digital art. We're working a lot with brands to kind of change the game, basically. I started off as a digital artist and a graffiti artist back in the day when I was studying in Solent University. And I almost, you know, the guys who know the story, like I always knew that there was something more than just a 9-to-5. I got warned early on when I was a student that jobs in the creative industry is pretty, hard to get, you know, and it's basically who you know. So I thought, let me try and let's try and control things a little bit more. So in my second year, I decided to start a Studio Blub, basically, and start my own kind of studio.
Nice.
And, you know, I was emailing clients from, you know, local restaurants, bars and stuff, and, you know, doing it under the name just Studio Blub. So it made me feel a little bit bigger than what I was. It was just little old me.
Yeah, yeah.
It kind of stuck. And I think, and after my third year, I graduated and, I graduated with a 2-1. I was one mark off a first.
Oh.
And that's when I realised, it's hard. That's when I realised, you know, there's more to life than this. And, you know, if I'm controlling the way people are marking my work, what's going to happen in the actual, like, real industry? You know, you do a bit of work and then someone says it's rubbish and then you're just stuck in a cycle. So I didn't want that to happen. So yeah, so I kind of, when I graduated, started up a Studio Blub from a bedroom up in above a pizza shop in Southampton. And it was fun times, really fun times, you know, making just bare minimum, just enough to pay rent. But I knew that the end goal was going to be massive and I stuck with it. And because I had a particular digital style that people love to sort of, you know, apply their brand to or collectors' posters, I knew I had something. So the end goal was to create a studio, and here we are.
And is that because, like, so often people who go into design, they kind of go in looking for the commission and being told what to do, but you did it the other way and said, you kind of built your own brand and then they will come. Do you want to talk a little bit about that? Like, what was the impetus for that? Why did you go that way?
I think the key is I always had a little bit of a brand. So when I used to do like graffiti or sell paintings on eBay, it was a particular style. And when I was selling paintings on eBay, there was people from Japan, there was people from Norway buying my artwork. And I realized that if you kept it consistent and not kind of deviate and confuse your audience or confuse your buyer, they know exactly what they want. And luckily enough, I was doing that whilst at university. So I knew that if I stuck to something that's consistent, it created that brand. And when people come to me or even spoke to me, they knew what they were getting. And, you know, that just allowed me to kind of evolve it, build on the confidence as well. And that created the brands. And I think with Studio Blub, you know, it was always me. Like, Studio Blub was myself, what I love, my interests, the direction where I wanted to take everything, because it was me. And then obviously as time went by, I had to evolve. So it made it more of a brand. So it wasn't just about me. It was about my thinking and about how we can take that to the next level.
Great. And I always try and talk to like students about this, about the importance of really nurturing and developing your taste. How did you, before kind of going in and starting up your own studio, like what were the influences on you and how did you nurture your taste? Because you obviously got a sense of your taste quite early.
Yeah, I think a lot of it was down to music as well. So, you know, when I was even a boy at uni, we were all just playing music, and you know, I was known for like R&B, slow jam, and my mate who loved his house, and my other mate who loved rap and hip hop, and like everything was just molded into one. And I think it was when I started started loving grime music, that's when I realized like there's a subculture of London that was been celebrated. And I think I kind of tie myself a lot to it, you know, the grime scene, like the way I dress, the way I started to learn how to MC, you know, and how do I match my visuals up with that sound as well. And again, it was just like, that's when I got the inspiration and the kind of like the taste of what I truly am. So it was, again, it's probably been sort of pretty self-aware from a young age, where I knew I was always different anyway in class. Like even when I was a kid, my twin sister used to say I was just like crack everyone up at school and just muck about and just draw. And instead of that being a negative, I embraced it, and that's who I became. And then, you know, that kind of formed the basis of sort of who I am. And I think obviously with my art, it's an expression of, you know, what I represent. You know, it's a bit of a risk taker. It's, you know, it's colourful, it's bold. There's a lot of like sort of energy in there. And I just wanted to kind of translate what's in my brain onto the paper and onto the screen as well. So it was all different types of influences that kind of sort of brought what you see today.
Yeah. And you grew up in London. Whereabouts in London did you grow up? Because I'm always fascinated by all the fusion in London, having lived in London.
Yeah, wicked. Yeah, so born and bred in Brentford, London.
Nice.
No one knew where the hell that is in London. It's West London, right next to Chiswick and Kew. But as soon as Brentford came into the Premier League, big up Brentford FC, the world knew where Brentford was. So gone are the days when people said, oh, you're from Bradford? You're from Brentwood? I'm like, oh, no, it's Brentford. So now I've got like people like Cristiano Ronaldo saying, yeah, I'm playing at Brentford this weekend. I'm like, oh, this is mad. Me and my wife bought a place back here again, back in the community. And, you know, it's a chance for us to kind of build a name for myself in my own community and, you know, take Brentford and put Brentford on the map.
Because I think that's so important to have all of those different kind of synergies around you. And London is a perfect place for that sometimes. I live in a tiny fjord now in the middle of nowhere.
I do.
It's lovely, but I do sometimes miss all of that. Yeah, just different flavors around and stuff. So you went into, you started doing graffiti at some point. What were you getting into kind of graffiti art, and what was the road into that?
Just like such a point, John. There's our studio is based in Soho, and like you can't get more culturally relevant than that. So you pop out for lunch and you're just seeing all sorts of interesting people and attitudes, sound. And again, that adds to being inspired, you know, and you want to keep up because you think you know what you know, but until you see, you know, someone walk down the street looking different or looking swag, or when you're meeting someone at like, you know, a bar, you realize that there's a whole new world of culture out there and you just want to learn and adapt. And I think with that, it's you know, we're lucky to be based in Soho to have that on our doorstep. And I tell my team, go out for lunch. Yeah. I tell my team, go out after work and go for drinks and just meet people, because this is the hub. This is where it all happens. And this is what's going to fuel creativity as well. So, yeah. So, yeah, I just wanted to touch upon that, because like London is like so like just happy just to kind of be here and really, really sort of enjoy that to push us further, man.
Nice. And how do you keep your sort of bag of your collection of things that inspire you? How do you draw on that? Because I think everybody has their own process of kind of grabbing and keeping their scrapbook of what. How do you consume stuff to inspire you?
Well, trust me, you'll see times and I'm just like spaced out, because like I've seen I see everywhere. I think the most important thing one of my tutors for Shakespeare, Solon, one of my favorite tutors ever, he believed in me from day one, right? And he always said to me, just look up. I was like, what do you mean? He's just like, when you're walking down the street, just look up, because there's so much stuff that people don't see or recognize that when you see it, it could inspire you, and you could see the next thing that could lead on to your work. And I always remember that. And I think, you know, I take that as a kind of overall arching umbrella when I say, when I look up, it means let's just look around, look at things and different industries that could inspire you. So it was like architecture, it was fashion, again, it was music, it was the arts as well. So all that kind of thing about just looking around was just feeding me my inspiration. And I think when it became apparent was Instagram, when that first came out and stuff. And for me, I was never really a Pinterest kind of guy, because a Pinterest thing it's images that have been there for years and you don't know how long they've been there and it could be dated. And but within Instagram, for me, was a place at the time where it was live. I was getting live inspiration. So everything I did see, I used to just screenshot it. And you know, you've got a save tab now, but I used to screenshot it and just build up this portfolio of just imagery and this knowledge and making myself just inspired every time I see it. And I think with that, it's just like I've maintained that to this day. There's other, you know, inspiration sites that you can go on. But for me, it was just like that moment where I can just start collecting and knowing what's happening out there and then keeping relevant, keeping current. So everything I do touch, I know because I've seen it and I know what's happening. So you've got to keep up.
Nice. And you then sort of like turn that into, I love the statement on your website about it's all about culture. So you've really kind of taken internet culture, digital culture, and turned it into this tangible thing. Do you want to talk a little bit about like how you work with brands and or how creating digital culture brought brands to you? Because I think people struggle to get their head around that sometimes.
Yeah, good question, John. Now, listen, I think that when I first started Studio Blup, it was, you know, me and my business partner, right, it's my best mate, you know, we started it up and we always kind of wanted to, like I said, bring ourselves into the company, but also bring ourselves into brands. And to make that happen, you had to be in the heart of culture. You know, you had to be out. You had to be at the raves, the gigs, you know, seeing live music, being a part of it. So you're absorbing that live kind of information. So I remember, you know, going back to the grime scene, you know, my boy DJ Logan Sama was inviting me to go to a Skepta show live. And, you know, next minute I'm on stage, like backstage. Yeah. And I'm looking out to this audience of like 10,000 like kids just loving Skepta. And I was thinking, this is amazing because I'm getting real insight and real feedback of what the real culture is. But what was it that made them love that artist? So beyond just the music, I was looking at what made them excited. So when I saw that, it made me break down what the artist was doing. So if I could apply what the artist was doing, then I could apply that sort of to the work. And what that meant was I was applying the culture of what's relevant to the work and the advice that I was giving to brands. Now, as that sort of moved on, last year we launched a side brand called Blup Gen, where we've actually teamed up with 7 of the best universities in the UK. And, you know, we are in touch with the students. You know, we're running live workshops, we're doing mentoring courses, we're doing live briefs. But what that's doing is keeping us in touch with the culture, what's happening in our audience, asking the right question, watching it, and then bringing that into the studio to make sure that our work appeals to them so that the brand can actually get their message across the right way and authentically. So that's what we mean about living the culture and learning the culture to actually deliver for the culture.
Nice. Because I think it feels like you were actually quite ahead of your time, because I feel like there was a period of time where brands wanted to almost fake talking to Gen Z or whatever you want to call them, and got it wrong so many times. And we now seem to have moved away from this sort of trad advertising. But what's fascinating to me is there hasn't been that many companies that get it. There's a lot of old school agencies trying to put on the clothes of it, but never quite succeeding. Are you feeling there's a sort of, is there a turning point in the industry at the moment? Are you?
I still feel there's a lot to go, a long way to go.
Yeah.
Like you said, there are companies now just like shoehorning it in and pretending that they, you know, care about diversity when it's just like a little tick box, or they pretend to care about the Gen Zs just to make a quick buck and sell. And, you know, we're seeing this ever since COVID where, you know, with what happened with BLM, like it's just things that are just not putting 100% in. They're just doing it just to say they do it. And there are ways to make it authentic, to make it real and to care. Like with Studio Blup, we want to create a backbone. Like the backbone is inspiring the next generation. So if we can do that and help the next gen of creatives have a future by listening to them and giving them opportunities, that in turn just makes us do it naturally. And I think, you know, with the industry now, it's, you know, they get people like us to help them. And that's how we're positioning ourselves, because look, we're not here to take everything. We're here to share the knowledge and spread the knowledge and let us work with you and actually translate what you're trying to say to these kids and a new generation and actually make it feel authentic and actually teach you guys, you know, how to do it and do it properly. Because once you do a campaign or something that goes out and it's wrong, it's just going to have a big backlash of the brand, and you could have taken your time with it and done it properly and make it feel authentic rather than rushing it just because it's a tick box.
Yeah. And how did you find your way through that, kind of going into it, setting up your own thing? Was it a process of sort of trial and error, or like what was the growth, or the, because you've been doing it for quite a while now, so like what were the stepping stones and the growth like for you, and were there ups and downs?
So plenty of ups and downs, and you know, it's that we could have, I always joke about this, everyone, like we could have been bigger than what we were if we sold our soul, right? If we just done stuff that was on trend at the time, or you know, do things just to pay the bills. We wanted to take our time and build the brand, build who we are, build the experience and the reputation, and make things real. You're seeing a lot of, say, startups coming in and go straight in, but then they're not going to have longevity because they haven't been through everything. So the downs were like, you know, me and Alex started and we were sharing places. You know, we were so broke that we couldn't even afford to pay our bills, right? You know, there was bailiffs coming at our doors and stuff. The classic story, a bailiff came to our door saying, you haven't paid your electricity bill, because every bit of money we were getting, we were spending it going to a client in Brighton on a coach just to win that thing. And it was the hard graft, you know, just come out of university. We didn't want to rely on like parents or get into ourselves into debt. We wanted to do things the right way. So, you know, we've been rock bottom, made us grow a thicker skin, so when things did go bad, or when things do go bad, we know we can pull through it. And that gave us the energy to succeed,
right?
That gave us the energy to make sure we do things properly, learn how to sell, how to talk about your work, and also evolve as well and do things the right way. So those are the kind of like the downs, but the ups, and I always say this, is it is the journey. It is every day waking up and doing something new, keeping it consistent, staying positive, and just know that your end goal is there. And when you can finally kind of see where your end goal is coming, it's the best feeling as well. So that's what I would say. Like, it's that balance of getting things right.
And did you get to that point? And I think this is what so many new creators often worry about, is when you start getting to that point of like having to run a business and be a creative at the same time. What was the balance like, and how was that?
It was impossible, to be honest, John. Like, when it was just me on my own after the second year after uni, it was impossible, because like I would do a flyer for a club and like I wouldn't send the invoice off for 4 weeks because I didn't have time to send an invoice. So it was like a never ending like circle of just like being skint. You know what I mean? But obviously when the check came through, I was like, oh sweet. But then I'll wait another 4 weeks to send another one. So my admin was awful. But the best thing, when I bought Alex, you know, I pitched the idea to Alex. You know, he was obviously my best boy at university. And we was in Brighton, Brighton was in Bournemouth one day over a bottle of wine, cheap bottle of wine, £6. And I was like, mate, how do you fancy like going into sort of business together? Like, you know, I've done, you know, 2 years of this. Yeah, you know me, like back of your hand. You did your dissertation on me. Like, you did a dissertation on Studio Blup. And how this, you know, how this kid from London, you know, started this thing above a pizza shop, and talked about the business wave kind of thing, did his research, and he got a distinction. So I was thinking, hang on a minute, if he's gonna get snapped up, I need to snap him up first. So I pitched the idea to him. I said to him, look, let's go 50-50. But what I need from you, Alex, is like, trust me and just help me. So I need someone just to help me, you know, kind of get my sort of eggs in a row. Help me send the invoices, you know, help me liaise with clients, basically low-key just manage me. And at the same time, I was teaching him how to, there's different types of ways of how a business works. So we had the creativity side sorted with me. And then we had Alex sorting out like the admin kind of side and the business development. And the best thing about having a partner was it just allowed us to bounce ideas off each other. And if the idea if he wasn't really feeling the idea, I'd be like, oh, he doesn't like this idea. So I have to keep convincing him and convincing myself that this idea was good until I got the right idea and execute it and then show it to him. And he'd be like, that's good, Dines. I like that. So it was always having someone to bounce off. And that's how I kind of sort of merged the two to create what we are.
Nice. Because I think people overlook that actually, I try and say this to students all the time, is actually the first network you ever have is the people in your class, right? And actually you might be sat next to the next
100%.
Bill Gates or whatever. So you shouldn't, and that's actually where the magic partnerships happen, is when you both got nothing to lose and you can kind of work together. That's great.
100%, John. And a quick point on that as well, is when I do speak to the universities, or actually when I do my conferences, I always say to people that your university or your workplace is your biggest network and your biggest hub to start collaborating. Like there was, I mean, gone are the days where you just keep everything close to your chest and you don't want to speak to anyone. Like just share ideas, because even if you're a 3D designer, a producer, a photographer, bring in your network, build your own agency, like within your network. And actually, like you can get the best bits of work done. And even if they're not a creative, there is someone who can do copywriting. There's someone who can do accounts, who can do finances, that you can bring them on board and just say like, I need help. And just being totally honest with that. And I think when you kind of lose that ego, it allows you just to let go of other things to just develop what you're good at.
Yeah, no, that's a brilliant point. And I think, I suppose, when did you then know, what was the point that you felt like, okay, I've arrived now? When did you feel like you were starting to get kind of stable?
Well, that question that comes up a lot is, it's like, it almost, you know, you can almost wrap that up, is like, when do you feel like you were successful? And I always used to kind of link it to money.
Yeah.
I used to think, okay, when I'm out of the reds, you know, I'm done, I've made it. And when it got to the point when obviously, you know, we had enough to pay bills and, you know, things, it wasn't what I thought. And so it was constantly, I was constantly chasing the wrong thing. I think when I realized like I was making an impact and inspiring, like I said, a whole new generation, for me, that means it's success. I've heard stories of, you know, students when I spoke to them 15 years ago who are now at positions of big brands saying, Dines, when you was at our talk, you know, you said something that resonated with me and made me just push even harder. And now I'm head of this. Let's collab. You know what I mean? And for me, it's just like, whoa, that's the level of success, because something that I've gone through, I'm so transparent with it and tell my story, that it allows whoever listens to that to push themselves to the next level. And if I can make that change internally and, you know, change the industry or just change someone's life, whether it's for themselves or their family, for me, that's like the road to success. And it doesn't mean about numbers or followers or how much you got in the account or the big brands. Yeah. It's that respect of saying, man, like thank you. And I turn around and say, no, thank you, because you're the people that keep me going.
Yeah, no. I think each one teach one is a much nicer philosophy than how many likes did I get. Yeah,
I like that. That's cool.
When it comes to kind of working with brands, like what's the process of how you do collabs and how you work with brands? What do they come to you? Like because it's different to being given a brief, I guess.
Yeah. We've got to keep ourselves relevant. That's the number one thing, right? So it's always innovating within the studio. So within studio, like there's 15 of us, right? So we've got a team of like amazing designers, animators, project managers, account managers, everything. So we're building a family here. And the first thing we do is it's like, Dines will tell you as a studio, what would you want to work on? And we all sit there and think, okay, cool. We'd like to do some like VR, AR, tech, going into this. And we'll sit there and cook some ideas up. And we'll almost take a hit on the revenue that we're making and take the team away from client work to focus on innovating our stuff. So when we're innovating and creating just something new, or if it's an animation or whatever, we then release it as our own work that other brands will have a look and say, oh, I like that. Can we see how we can do something, you know, with you guys to create that and just kind of brand it up? So that was a kind of a tactic for quite a while. But then after a while, we kind of realized, hang on a minute, as soon as we're getting into brands, the idea is getting watered down a lot, because there's so many people that want to, you know, put their input and stuff, and it becomes one thing and then it comes out another, and then all of a sudden you're not proud of the work that you've done. So then we realize, like, how do we be more in control of that? And, you know, there are certain brands that we sort of collaborate with as a Studio Blup collaboration. So it'll be Brand X Studio Blup.
Right.
So it's just like, look, whatever we do, it's going to work, because this is the audience where we are known for, and this is the style. And, you know, whatever we kind of do, we want you guys to be proud of collaborating with us. At the same time, we want to be proud of working with you. So when we start doing a proper collaboration, the ideation, we'll bring in their side in and our side team, and we're then all of a sudden one big team for one big idea that can actually execute in such an amazing way. And I think that's when you really find out that it's not just about keeping, like I said, everything close to your chest and having that ego. Make everyone in that company be proud to working with you on the projects. And when it's released, everyone is proud and everyone's sharing it, everyone's getting excited because they feel like it's their own as well.
Nice. And I think I'm starting to see there being more approaches like that. And there is I'm interested in your opinion on this idea of a creator economy coming that is much more driven by the creators rather than the advertising or the money. What are your thoughts on this sort of evolution that we might actually be, creators might be driving an economy rather than being just paid advertising?
I think we're seeing a major shift. I think with creators, let me rewind it a little bit. With creators, and obviously that certain age and demographic, right? I think there's a lot of pressure on them at the moment. And we're seeing a lot of these like TikTok stars and YouTubers and like just influencers being like, under pressure to continue to innovate and create. And really, I feel being a little bit exploited by brands, because at the same time, these content creators are coming in, giving their fresh ideas, getting a few hundred quid, whatever, depending on what level of influence or content creator you are. And then brands making millions off it. The shift and the balance is wrong. And I feel like, if you're going to get an influence, or not even influence, I don't mean you have to have a social presence, but if you're going to bring this new talent in, put them on a pedestal, make them part of the brand, give them royalties, bring them in. So you're not just using their idea because it's hot and there's a fancy dance that you're doing, collab. And I think at the moment, you know, every brand is scratching their heads and to understand like how this works, because everyone's jumping on this and no one really knows how it's working. Everyone wants that viral content. So to create that authenticity, you have to work with these kids from the ground up, and you have to learn what's happening in the industry. So when you do have this big advertising campaign, it hits a spot because you know it, you're real to it. And whoever's, when it's the young audience, they can feel it's real. You give them 1.5 seconds, I think, and they know it's a fake, and they know it's just you're being sold to, and you've lost them forever. And that's, I think, the balance, and I think that's a struggle what brands are going through at the moment.
No, for sure. And I think, likewise, you make a good point that the creators, it's such an organic process that you can get, it's like suddenly becoming a star footballer overnight. You get all of this attention and that, but you haven't actually had the machine to get used to it. Like maybe when people started out before, they had some kind of nurturing or mentoring. So what are your thoughts about kind of mentoring in this space and putting some support in for particularly like new creators and so forth?
Yeah, I think it's, first of all, I always talk about mental health as well. And there's steps of dealing with pressure and not looking at what this influencer has. He's driving a Lambo, or he's on this private jet, or he's, dressing in his LV, or she's at this like sick restaurant, in Dubai. It's this social poisoning that's like changing the landscape of like these creators. And my whole thing is be patient, and telling them it will take you 15 years to get to where you need to be, because you need to do things properly as well. And I think with the whole like mental health issues and problems, they're getting stressed, they're getting anxiety, they're thinking they're underachieving, and it's having a knock-on effect to our young talent, because they'll put something on TikTok or they'll put something on Instagram and it gets 10 likes and they've given up because they think no one's seen their work or likes their work. So the key here was, how do you conquer that? And it's something as simple as learning how to meditate, or learn how to just create that space in your head to allow to create that journey and actually have that that end goal as well. And being like that one unit as well. So when you do have that successful period, you know how to deal with it. You know how to keep it, how to create longevity in the game as well. But I think from that whole like mentoring side, before any business talk, before any like how to cut out a picture on Photoshop, it's how is your mind going? Like, how do you get that right? How do you get that self-aware and know what you want to do and what you want to achieve? And then your talent is natural, and that can easily be just harnessed and get the best out of you.
Yeah, I think too often, I reflect on this a lot in media education. We spend so much time teaching people the tools and the craft. We don't spend enough time teaching people or helping people understand who they are, so that, because that's what you take to the table, and understanding your own issues and what informs your taste. Yeah.
And John, you're right, mate. And I think I didn't know who I was until I was like 28. How mad is that? Because like I said, I'm young, I'm absorbing, I'm a sponge, I'm looking at other things. And after a certain age, you don't care anymore what people think of you as well. And and it's just like, when you're younger, I get it, you're trying to impress, you're trying to trying to get that girl, you're trying to get that guy, or trying to flex or whatever. And that's normal, and you have to understand that you're going to go through that process of trying to find who you are. But when you are unapologetically you, and people say, oh, you're different, or like, yeah, I like when you walk into this room, that's when you know you found yourself as well. But it takes time to find that. And a lot of people are still searching to this day about who they are.
Yeah.
And, you know, not trying to impress everyone. But once you find that consistency in your life and keep things simple, you're free.
Yeah. Going back to kind of the educational side, like, what was your experience like? Because obviously you decided at a certain, in your degree, I'm going to do this path. So what was it about the system that was making you go that way? What did you, because I think it is a system, and systems
here we go.
Do things. Yeah.
Right, John, how deep do you want to get to this? Because go deep.
Yeah,
all right. I mean, it's going to annoy a lot of, like, you know, just,
no,
my contacts. But anyway, like, I feel, I mean, there's a lot of change since, but, you know, when I was studying, we were spending weeks just learning what a font is. Like, I didn't care what history of a font it was, because all I wanted to do when I was at university is learn the game. Like, if you're a tutor for me, like, I needed to look at you and be inspired. I needed to see what you did to get to this stage and teach me the ropes. I know how to draw. I know how to create. I don't need to know the basics. I can learn that in my bedroom.
Yeah.
So for me, like, the education system at the time didn't prepare a lot of students coming out of university. And when I say that, only probably me and Alex out of 70 people in our class, 70, 90 people, did our own business. And it's crazy. And because people were so focused on getting that grade, that when they finished university, they had nothing. They had no portfolio. They were just in the system. And then they just got lost, and they just got into that workforce, and they didn't become anything or fulfill their potential that they had, because they didn't know how to speak to people. They didn't know how to network. They didn't know how to send an invoice like I did. They didn't know how to, they didn't know the basics of what running a business is, or climbing a ladder to the top and becoming a number two in the company. And I think that put a lot of pressure on people paying back the student loan. So they just, the first job they got, they go straight into work. And by the end of it, when you're in your 40s, you wish you took that step and took that risk. And I think now it's changing. I obviously, with the universities that we're partnering up with and we're advising, we're making sure these students are coming out with a bit more full-rounded and willing to take that risk, but actually having a little bit more knowledge about how the business works. And I think, obviously, when, you know, no disrespect to, like, my university, there was no support after. So once we graduated, I didn't get but maybe from, like, a couple of tutors, you know, years later, but I never got a support saying, how are you getting on? Blah, blah, blah. But it's when I started making moves and doing talks around the world, I got the phone call to say, can you speak to our students? And that's when I realized it changed, because those tutors that believed in me got me back to then say, actually, this guy has been there, done it. Let him teach them what he did to make things go wrong, all right. And then when you leave, you have that. And like I said back earlier on in this talk, that those kids who listen to me are now probably, you know, top of the game, because they've heard the real insight and the real data about how the real life works in this industry.
And I think that's so true, because I think I've had students over the years who kind of go, how do I get an A? And I'm like, great. So what are you going to do on day two?
Yeah, I love that.
Like, you can't just, like, the bachelor is not the golden ticket to Willy Wonka's factory, right?
Yeah.
So hey, that's a joke. You have to kind of figure out. And at times I've done things that I've had students say, well, why are we learning invoices? It's boring. And it's like, I just want you, as you said, I really like that term, know the game.
Love that, John.
It's not the be all and end all. And there are other, it's good to be philosophical and think about things and understand the history of things. But you also, if you don't understand how the game works, you can't even get your foot in.
1,000,000%, John. And it's little things that, you know, what we're trying to build out with Blup Gen as well, and Blup Academy. Hopefully we've got to launch a Blup Academy University. And it's like teaching people, like, kid, you know, when I say kids, like, you know, talent, how to sell their work. How do you get in front of a client and convince them that your idea is the best idea and work with them, you know? And, you know, it's what are those processes to get, you know, to get you paid, to get your work seen by millions of people, you know? And, you know, it's how do you build that portfolio? What is those conversations? You know, how do you listen to a client and then read between the lines? those are the things I think that trial and error, going from, you know, from nothing and making mistakes, allows us to kind of teach the talent what to do and how to do it as well. And, you know, it's not an easy road. There's a lot of things that you got to learn, but you make it fun. You make every invoice you send fun. And that's what I think is lacking today.
I think there's a revolution coming, and I always think there is a revolution coming. But I wonder sometimes, maybe after the pandemic, I think the pandemic really put a shining light on education, saying that if you can digitize it on Zoom, then there's something wrong. If you can literally condense it into here's a PowerPoint on a video, then that isn't education. And I think people kind of have woken up and gone, well, what do I want to do? Do I want to just follow that straight path that I'm being told to do? And it does seem to have sort of shaken education and the workplace, and people are starting to ask quite profound questions about what they actually want to do with themselves.
And you know, like I said, with our universities that we're speaking to, it's, you know, we just got to make sure that the kids come first. And I know it's hard because you institutions need to make their money, right? But how do you make it so that it's an investment for you when you're applying for this university worldwide? And it is, what is it do you get at the end of this? And I think we're seeing a lot more of, like, you know, the talent going into, say, brands and, you know, working with, I mean, like Ravensbourne, you know, my boy Derek Yates, who's actually killing the game in terms of like pioneering what universities should be by collaborating with Apple, by doing live talks, by, you know, introducing them to, like, you know, places like Studio Plus, giving them real life experience, because this guy is the key and this guy can open up the doors. And when you have that constant and you have that little bit of inspiration, that will go a long way. So that X amount you're paying for at an university is priceless, because you've had real world experience. And I think that, like you said, after COVID, universities needed to wake up and shift and be like, whoa, we can't just set courses anymore, because we can just do that online and they can do it in a minute. It's like, how do we create that thread, and actually how do we create the kids to get that experience, so when they leave again, they're top of the game.
I think when I was at uni, they said, "Here, this is a rubber roomed environment, play." And I think that was such a good, there was no like course curriculum. It was just like, you're going to make stuff, get on with it, and there'll be these perspectives. And I think we need, I mean, actually within the sort of creative industries, we need to play more. And there isn't enough play in later education, maybe. So that's good that you're doing that.
Yeah. I think being playful is the fun thing, you know. And I was speaking to actually a young kid who worked at just an experiential agency, and he kind of was like, you know, I got thrown into, you know, the deep end. I was learning how to make stuff with my hands, but, you know, it wasn't really me. And I thought, you know what, that's fair play to you, because at that young age, you know what you didn't like and what you wanted to be, but you weren't too big headed to be like, I don't like it, and shut it down. He was willing to put his hands down, get things dirty, and then understand, like, okay, if I don't like that, what else do I like? And how do I look deep within? And I think that's when he started being a little bit like more experimental and playful, and just like thinking, okay, cool, let's try this. And making it a challenge for himself and finding the time to do that as well. And even look, guys are, you know, our age as well, we're always discovering stuff, you know, we always want to try things, you know, and scratch that itch, you know, and just you know, well, let me try it. Let's see, I might like it. If I don't, it doesn't matter. I'll just go back to my, you know, my normal love, you know. So it's always about just trying things and innovating and just having fun with it.
I love that you on your website have a curated playlist. I love companies that just say, here, have a listen to what's inspiring us. I think more people should do that, because
hey John, we've got a new mix coming to us soon, so it's gonna be even better, mate, even better.
Because the danger is actually in this digital world, it knows us too well, and therefore algorithmically it keeps telling us what we like rather than getting you out. So that sort of leads into another question. How do you get out of those algorithms and break out of sticking to what you like? How do you jump the track sometimes? Is there a process or a way?
I think, yes, it's going against the grain, you know. It is trying to, but when you're bored and just sitting there watching your Netflix and stuff like that, actually I used to be so against like watching stuff on TV, but now with Netflix and other streaming platforms, you can, there is stuff that you can like educate yourself on different things and just force yourself to watch. I mean, I was watching something on Netflix about, you know, how, you know, how dodgy dealing arts, this woman who bought dodgy art, whatever. And actually, I looked at that documentary, and instead of like listening to the story, I was reading between the lines, and I was thinking, okay, where did she go wrong? Like, how did she get duped into buying this fake art and selling it for millions? And what could she have done wrong? And actually, how did that scammer convince that woman to buy it? And, you know, is there a common thread there that actually, at the end of the day, it's just like they both learned how to sell a product. So yeah. I was just like, yeah, looking at it, I was thinking, don't scam people, make sure it's authentic. But it's that story where everyone was always out for that extra bit of like hustle. And I realized, like, you know, it's, you know, related to going against the algorithm, it's just like, okay, I'm not just keep looking at art, I'm gonna look at how business works, I'm gonna look at how like donuts are made, for example, you know what I mean? Just like educating myself, forcing myself to look at things that I don't care about, but at the same time read between the lines and think, okay, if that conversation came up, I'm all rounded to have a conversation, because at least I know a little bit, but I'm not just stuck in my lane. And that's always a thing I've done. And even like football, I love my football. And, you know, I was just so constant on just like, all I cared about was like Brentford and Arsenal. And I didn't care about any other team in the Prem. And I think after a while, I was just like, let me just learn about other teams. Like, let me just learn about the history, and like, let me just watch other games. And as soon as I'd done that, my mind just blew. And I was just like, whoa, this is like, all this time I was just concentrating on this narrow little path. I went against the grain and just learned about other things that gave me so much more richness in life.
No. I think it's important to like even read newspapers that you don't agree with, or watch things that you really don't agree with on any level. But to what's the mindset of somebody else, or so forth? Which with your Blup Gen, like, how do you tap into the zeitgeist, like the network effect of who do you draw on, and what's the sort of process of getting the zeitgeist of what's going on in the culture?
Yeah, I think there's so many moving parts as well, but again, the core is creativity as well. Without the creativity, no one care who we are, like, you know what I mean? So we need to create something that people will be like, oh wow, fuck, like, sorry, how do we get in that? Mum, I try to not swear, and I mean, she tells me off so many times, I'm getting better. They're like, oh my god, how do we actually like you know, make that noise so that it gets us attention, so then when we do walk in the room or send that invite out, that people want to come and listen to us because we've got the product as well. And I think that's the case, you know, and it's like finding that core first and then shouting about it, right? So when we go to, you know, even our fans on our social followers, right, we can just send out a survey, but we know we're going to get answers back, because, you know, what we give out so often is, you know, inspiration with like the work that we do and stuff. Now, we've gone a little bit quiet since March because we're cooking something so big, like on Studio Blup, that it's going to change the game. We're going to, you know, release just artwork after artwork after artwork, get the energy back. But we want to innovate, because what we realized as well, like, that was the key to, you know, getting our audience excited. But we kind of neglected that side of it, and we concentrated too much into the business rather than what was making it work. So we take a step back, regroup, create a new bit of energy, and that's how you tap into that zeitgeist, because people see what you want to do and they want to listen and they're willing to help because you've provided them inspiration for ages.
Nice. And you work on sort of like multiple verticals, so it's not just sort of digital design, it's you're working in NFTs, you're working merch. Like, how do you diversify like that, or cover all of those bases, or is it just literally what's coming out of your head?
Yes, John, good research, man. That's amazing. I love that. You've got some good questions, man, up there. Well done, man. That's, mate, honestly, like, it's, and it's amazing you kind of spotted that as well. And, you know, we try not to sort of talk, like, shout about it. And, you know, that's their agency philosophy, right? So if we get a new client or anyone new who just discovers Blup, I want them to go down a bit of a rabbit hole, and then they'll click on the shop and they're like, oh, all right, you got a t-shirt, you got merch. So you know what a brand is because you are a brand. And then you click on it, and then, you know, you've got like, you'll discover stuff about like the NFTs. And like, you know, we were doing that since 2017, before NFTs was even called NFTs, you know. And, it's, we've always been digital artists. So now digital art is a thing, ever since Beeple's made 69 million, because people all of a sudden like, ah, that's what you guys do, digital art. We couldn't quite put a finger on what you did. And I think because of that, you know, it allowed us to build that brand and allowed us to kind of adapt it to merch, adapt it to NFTs, adapt it to sound, adapt it to product, and not just a design agency. It's a creative house. And I think that flexibility just allowed us to stay relevant, allowed us to stay fresh, and allowed us to keep innovating.
Because, I think that's the problem with your old school agencies and studios, is they're kind of, they've locked themselves or wallpapered themselves into a corner because they only do one thing. And actually now you can, it's about expressing yourself. And as you say, it's about being creative. And then there are all the expressions of creativity. And kind of real buys real. So if you're being fake with it, it doesn't work. No, the minute I kind of was digging and delving, I was like, ah, oh, this is totally my, because I look at too much shiny in the world, and I don't want to teach students that. I'm like, no, go and look where things are happening, because it's like Ravensbourne. You were hanging out with graffiti artists and so forth. You weren't just making shiny stuff, so it's in the ethos of doing it.
That's it, John. And I think I'm just on that point as well, like, you know, it does take, you know, pioneers like yourself to make these changes, and, you know, have interviews like, say, like this one, and all the amazing ones that you've had as well, to kind of just give those real insights as well. And that little bit of effort that you're doing is changing a lot of people's life, my bro. And it's just like, that's what we need. You're not being selfish with it. You're using your time wisely to inspire the next generation of the people that you are bringing into it. And I think we need more people like that, and people that want to give back. You know, that's where you are in this position as well. And I think, you know, I try to do that as well as running an agency as well. But your time is focused on doing this, and it's beautiful to see, man. And I do appreciate, obviously, on behalf of the industry as well, appreciate what you're doing as well.
Oh, thanks. I think it's all of our jobs to ignite more fires. And I think sometimes I can remember my first ever lecture, a guest person coming and saying, who wants to be a director? And everybody putting their hand up. And he said, none of you will be a director. And I thought, why are you pouring water on maybe everybody won't be, but like, if you ignite fires, good things can kind of come from it. I think inspiration, you can't program it. So you might as well try and spread the word and hear other people's experience. I think that's really important.
Amen.
So that kind of leads me to my next question, which is, when you're looking for people to either recruit or work, like how do you find people, and what kind of skills or attitudes or so forth are you looking for? What's the profile when you want to work with people, particularly within your company, I guess?
Yeah. So let's start with like the creatives. I think the creatives that we've got in actually put the work in to come work for Studio Blub. Honestly, we've Sarah, who's been with us for nearly sort of 10 years from the beginning. You know, we didn't even know what a job board was, so we just put something out on Gumtree and say we're looking for a graphic designer, Gumtree, and she just happened to stumble across it, and you know, she was like the only one that sort of applied. She came in and she was very raw. She didn't know anything about like motion designs, but there's something about her that was just like great. You know, she's a girl from Spain. She hardly spoke English at the time, but you could tell there was that hunger in her. And, you know, at the time, me and Al couldn't really afford to, you know, get someone on big salary. So he's like, look, Sarah, if you come in for this, you know, we can pay you what we can. But at the same time, I want to train you up to be the best in the world. And it was that kind of like mindset where she's like, I want to be part of this. And even with like the kind of designs we got, they spent 2 years getting to know me. So it'll be stuff like they'll inbox or I'll give you the zeitgeist here, but like they would follow like me or Shuja Bluff, and then they'll comment or send me things constantly inbox and say, oh, what do you think of this? So all of a sudden I'm getting to know this person. I'm like, okay, like cool. And I feel like I know them. And then it will be like, you know, they'll send me something. Can we go for like some coffee or internship? And for me, it's harder to say no, because this person has invested their time to actually get to know someone. They didn't care if it took me 3 weeks to reply to them, because I've got about a million messages. They didn't care. It was just that their consistency. So when I got to meet them, I felt like I know them. And then at the end of the day, I knew that they could add more value to Studio Bluff as well. So a lot of these, everyone actually, not willing to put the work in to follow their dreams and just actually try and just like be patient with it, have a plan and get to know people. And then you never know when there's an opportunity, you're going to be first. You want to be the first person in their mind if you're good enough to be like, cool, let's do something together. So that's how the kind of the hiring process. It sounds like, I mean, for my creative team, does it? And I feel like that's created that authenticity and that fingerprint of Bluck because they know us. Now the other side, called the Alex team. You know, we've got amazing account managers, project manager, etc. The business sides, you know, we like to take them from different industries. For them to teach us the process, teach us their experience, and you know, bring them in as leaders. So then it allows us to learn from them rather than teaching them as well the basics. We're still a baby company, you know.
Yeah.
And I need experts. I need warriors on my team to know what they're doing and like take us to the next level as well. And then obviously this last part is like, you know, the internships. You know, there's so many times that, you know, we've had, you know, students come in, and I've said to them and I've given them, you know, giving them the kind of the roadmap. I said, every week I want you to start producing artwork, and I'm going to be keeping an eye on you for like the next 2 years, because when something comes up, I'm going to call you. And whoever takes that advice, you know, are the winners. Whoever doesn't and isn't like, you know, have the time to do that because they're concentrating on other things, it's up to them, because I don't know what they've got going on in their life. But what I'm teaching them there is to stay consistent, because people like myself is watching you. So that's how, you know, we kind of make the kind of recruitments and collaborations going.
Nice. And if you, because I'm conscious of the hour goes so quick.
Keep going, Jonathan. It's all good, my man. You've got good questions.
Like, I suppose, what's the next level for you? Like, what do you want to achieve in the next sort of 5 to 10? Like, you were talking about the academy. Like, if you have a dream vision of what's the next layer.
Yeah. So we 2 years ago, we joined with a lab group. We joined forces with Lab Group from our mentor, Johnny Tews, who owns this amazing like tech company, neuro-linguistic program. And then he was our mentor. And here we had a guy that, you know, me and Alex used to go to see like Soho House and have, you know, these posh places and like speak to Johnny about, you know, where he can take us and what he can help. And, you know, how do we get to the next level? Anyway, so he just mentored us, and then all of a sudden, you know, he said, like, I want you to Studio Bluck to join this group, because I feel like you guys can add so much to our agency that we can conquer this together. You know, now all of a sudden, you know, we've got, you know, a team of like 80. You know, we've amazing comms agency called Raised by Wolves. We've got Insights company called Verge. You know, we've got River who make amazing like just tech, and you've got Studio Bluck that can make it look beautiful, right? So the next 5-10 years is like, how do we now we've got experts in the different fields, how do we become top 10 in the world? What is the collaborations and the work and the innovations that we need to do to make the world know who we are? And mixing that in with Bluck Gen, mixing that in with like the insights, mixing that in with our creativity, we've got something huge. And we just got to keep our head down, keep working. Because at the end of the day, the things that we've got cooking is going to just blow people away. And I feel this is our time to actually create something magical. And I think in the next 5 years, five, 10 years, I would love to see what we create and what we launch change lives, not just within the industry, but worldwide. And that's what we are aiming towards.
Lovely. That's such a nice, like, I think the creative industries are becoming the big platform. Like, they've always been boutique, but that's it's like gloves are off now. And I think there are all these opportunities, and it needs pioneers and people who've played the game for quite a while as well to show the way, because they're you know, the old guard of TV and film and agencies, they're kind of dying off, and there hasn't been enough people kind of pioneering for, so I can see that working incredibly well. So if you were going back to yourself at the beginning, knowing what you know now, what would you say to yourself as you left Solent and starting Studio Bluff?
I would actually say to myself, you know, always, because I remember having like, you know, fire in my belly when I got my result, and I always go back to this, when I got my result and I went to the result boards, and bear in mind, all the tutors were saying to me that I was going to get a first, because, you know, I was doing things different. And the examiner came in and marked me down by one mark. And I always questioned why, like, what did I do wrong? Like, why was this? And it was that thing that I said, you know what, I'm going to prove I'm wrong. Like, just because you told me about this mark and you told me how, yeah, and you made me feel a certain way and you're controlling my narrative of my life, I'm going to prove you guys wrong that I should have had the best mark in the class and made my family proud. They were proud anyway, but for me it was that fire in the belly, and that ignited beast, because I just needed to prove to people at the time that if someone like me can do it, anyone can do it. And if someone came from not having anything and building something that we have to today, then there is hope. And I could have gone down in a hole and I could have just like been just upset and just given up, whatever, from that just one little thing. But there's other things in life, you know, but that fire in the belly to push through was always that correct decision. So throughout that journey, throughout the no's and the mistakes that we made along the way, came the good things because we listened and I learned. So if I look back and I said to my, you know, my younger self, I say, like, things will go wrong. And it's just how you deal with those moments and bounce back quick and find a solution. Because at the end of the day, those solutions are going to take you to the next level. And I promise you that.
Lovely. And I think the world is safe that you didn't get a first, because you might have just took a job in an agency.
No, honestly, mate, you know what? I genuinely think if I would have got a first, what would have happened? Because one, I would have been like, oh, I made it. You know, I'd be like, oh, okay, cool.
Yeah, yeah.
I actually found out why I didn't get a first in the end, because they said if they gave me a first, almost the small amount of work I did, but it was so concise, it was so straight to the point that it was almost like perfect. Now, there were students in our class that were doing sketchbooks about this massive, like big sketchbook, 8, 9, 10 pages of sketchbooks. But I just produced one sketchbook that went from start to finish, the process, here's the end result. And that I knew that's how the industry worked, because I was doing stuff in my second year. I knew people needed the idea straight away, and I didn't want to waste time with just filling a book with leaves or like stones for research. I found out from my tutor who came to our first exhibition, he said, yeah, we had to do that, because if we would have given you first and then people saw how you worked, that would have been the blueprint, and it actually would have discouraged a lot of people not to put the work in. So we had to mark you down because you didn't, on paper, put in the hours like these guys did. And again, it was just like, weight off my shoulder. I was like, okay, so it wasn't me. It was me-ish, but there was a reason. And actually, looking back, actually, my reasons were right, because I stayed true to who I was from then to this point and just cut out the noise and just go straight to almost the answer, because I was so culturally aware, and the research I did, I knew what would work.
And yeah, I mean, as a, even as an educator, I don't fully understand the comprehension of the you've just got to fill up the portfolio to get a first. But I think everybody has the path that is right for them, I think, and I think that's great. Mate, it's been so good catching up with you. I'm going to have to fit. I've got to figure out a way to get you out here. We need you to come in.
Mate, inspire
some people out here as well.
I need to go to your neck of the woods so hard. I mean, yeah, Norway, Sweden, like all those places. I need to go. Like just as a designer, you know, just the Scandinavian lifestyle. Like, it's just I need to get. Like, I've got a few friends out there as well. So like, when I'm out in Norway, let's go for a few beers, the expensive beers.
yeah. But I know some places where you can get it a bit cheaper.
So. My G, I like that.
We and you can still find a lock even in Norway. So
I know you got the links and the connections. I know, John, you're a dark horse. I can tell.
But yeah, no. I will figure a way to hook it up. So it'd be great to have you out here. And thank you so much for your time. I think it's got lots of food for thought for the audience, and it's been really good. Thank you.
Thank you, John. And thank you for your time. And you know, like I said before, just keep sort of pushing away. And I think, you know, what you've got here and what you're building is incredible. And it's, you know, this is the stuff that is inspiring me as well to keep going as well. So amazing. So yeah, listen, when you're in London, we'll go for a few
let's do it, yeah,
few rums, few Jamaican rums, and we'll have some fun.
Lovely mate. All right, take care.
Best off. Bet on myself and I proved it. I know the industry ruthless. I'm really a threat for nuisance. The Chevy you're driving is ruthless. Think I'm the one and I proved it. I know the industry foolish. Think we're seeing the movies. It really ain't driving, I'm cooling. Look at me struggling, I'm right